Welcome to the Metaphysical Martini Show, where wit and wisdom come together to bridge the gap between the spirit realm and the physical world.
With Ani Avedisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ani Avedisian. Welcome to Metaphysical Martini, 3 parts spirit, 1 part rational mind. Add 2 drops of optimism, give it all a good hard shake and pour, dress it with the olives of grace and empathy. Sit back, sip slowly, and contemplate the wonder of cosmic co-creation. And a hearty hello to everyone out there. Hello, hello, hello. Thanks for joining this crazy old lady for yet another round of cocktails on this week's Metaphysical Martini, the show that tries to sort out what's true, what's a woo, and what gets flushed down the loo in a world that's rapidly evolving, which of course means we will be doing a great deal of problem solving. The Epstein files, oh my God, have turned into a buffet of bullshit. Not so much ridiculous as redacticus. Who knew that black rectangles have such a propensity for criminality? However, kudos to Trump for his backdoor tactics, always one step ahead of the halfwits. The left has openly stated that without illegals voting for them, you know, illegal criminals who launder money, rape, maim, kill, and cause grievous bodily harm to persons and property, without that demographic, they will never win another election. They have admitted it. 10 out of 10 for honesty from our blue-hued lunatics. In Persia, will the return of Zoroaster put the Islamist pigs in the toaster? I do hope so. I do love me some toasted bacon. Yum, yum, Mr. Imam. And in the UK, the Pakistani Muslim rape gang inquiry is revealing the depth of the pedophile prophet's agenda. The British police were complicit. They allowed, nay, facilitated, the grooming and sexual torture of young women for money. You filthy little oinkers. I hope you're all castrated without anesthetic before being handed over to the fathers and the brothers of the victims, and may what's left of your wretched carcasses be condemned for eternity to the 66th circle of hell, which I so wish today existed. And finally, at least for now, to all the clueless Americans who have been led astray by media and by money, to prevent federal troops making our streets safe again? What you are doing, darlings, is not funny. You are domestic terrorists, enemies of America. And when I became an American citizen, hands down the best day of my life thus far, I swore to protect this country from the likes of you and your soft, squishy, retarded brains. I take my duties very seriously. You are all clueless wankers, and you are all going down, hopefully, to Gitmo. Well, have I insulted enough people today? Good. Now we can get on with the show. Welcome back, Martini Heads. I raise my glass to you. And this glass contains a very lovely beverage, which we will discuss toward the end of the show. And by then, I'm sure I will feel much mellower. But for now, let me take a sip of today's drinky poo to see if it's a winner or a sinner. Hold on, darlings, don't go away. Sipping is happening. I had my doubts. I did a little pouty, but you know what? I could go a long way on this. More about that towards the end of the show. Hello, hello, hello. If you're joining us for the first time, a very warm welcome to you. Be advised, this show is politically incorrect so as not to erode the intellect. Your host is a conservative libertarian who voted for Trump and supports this administration's efforts to restore the republic. We don't do woke. We know all about the death poke, and we understand the evil behind the machinery built by what we commonly call the deep state. No red hair, certainly no blue, just the war between good and evil, light and dark. Darlings, rhinos are annoying as shit, and Camelot died a long time ago. It's time for America First, one American assembly populated by a rotation of citizen legislators. We stand for educated, articulate citizens who know and respect their country's origins and want America to have a bright and shiny future. We will not let it turn into a third world shithole or a wilderness outpost for one of those one world order agendas. Those dirty, stinking reptiles can eat their own bugs. They can live in their own 15-minute cities and restrict their own free will. Martini heads don't play that game. We eat bacon burgers, and we cruise around in our Chevrolets. We fish, we hunt, we drink. We drink beer and bourbon, and right now, we are beyond fed up with those who would defile this land. A land, by the way, which has a sacred purpose in mankind's evolution. So, now you know how this show is flavored. It is liberally sprinkled with my salty sass because I am a cranky old woman with no patience for imbeciles. What do we have for you on today's show, my darlings? Let's see. We will start, as we nearly always do, with quack questions, answers, and comments. We will then move on to a tiny pat of poetry where I, Ani Avedisian, torment you, the listener, with my fabulous street poetry. After that, we'll have awesome American history, where we will take a peek at the story behind the Culpa Ring, a network of spies active during the American Revolutionary War. And to top it all off, we will spend a few minutes discussing the cocktail du jour, because I am a big fan of the drinky poo. All right, let's get on with the show, and let us begin with quack. That was terrible. If you would like to share the contents of your minds with martini heads across the known universe, send your emails to me, because nobody else will read them, Ani@aniavedisian.com, or via snail mail to Cosmic Ani, P.O. Box 714, Wilsonville, Oregon, 97070, USA. And don't forget to let me know if and how you wish to be identified, or I shall be forced to refer to you as omit personal details. All right, darlings, let's shake up the fishbowl of perpetual perplexity and see what pops out. Shaky, shaky, what do we have today in the fishbowl of complexity? Ah, let's start with this one. This is from a chap called Aiden in Boulder, Colorado. Dear Ani, have you ever had a ghost who refused to leave during one of your paranormal jaunts? If so, how was the situation resolved? Well, that's a jolly good question, actually. I have had many ghosts who were frightened and disoriented and needed help understanding the process of moving on. And there are ways of taking care of that. I mean, I usually stay and chat with them until they feel comfortable with it. And then I walk them over to the open portal where hopefully someone they know greets them and takes them through. Aiden, it's not usually much of a problem because, you know, being a ghost is akin to being on a bad acid trip. No one physical can hear or see you. You can't eat or drink anything. So you have to take nourishment by touching warm living bodies or standing in areas with electric buzz, you know, like the power utility box or very, very fast moving water. If we get a really messed up, belligerent ghost, a portal guardian can grab them and push them through. It sounds a bit rough, but their touch is soft and reassuring. I use an ancient method of ghost relocation. During my clearing ceremony, portals just open up and ghosts are generally attracted to them like a moth to flame. Bada bing, bada boom, no ghost in the room. Once in a while, we will come across a property with some seriously messed up history. And what do I mean by that? Those would be locations where blood was shed, for example, tribal wars. If the tribal shamans wove spells into that land for whatever reason, it could, it does actually prevent us from affecting change in those areas. And that is very frustrating, especially for the property owner. And in my personal experience, if those tribes, who shall remain nameless, but you know who you are, if those tribes still have a presence, I will, of course, make every attempt to contact them and ask for advice and or actual hands-on help. But they don't like giving advice to outsiders. And to date, I have to say, I am deeply disappointed to report not a single tribal shaman has extended the courtesy of a reply. Thanks for the question, Aidan. I hope you have a long, happy, and ghost-free life. What else came in today? What else came in today? This is from Elaine from New York, New York. Dear Ani, as a member of the Armenian community, would you care to comment on Dr. Oz's statement on Medicare fraud? Oh, bugger. No, I wouldn't really. I mean, I'm not a member of any specific Armenian community. I'm a member of the richly diverse American community. It just so happens that my race ancestry is Armenian. And I don't deny that, and nor do I have a problem with it. But I was raised in the UK, so I do not share the fuck the government mentality of the old school immigrants from the now dismantled Soviet Union. And as far as I know, I have no ties to the Russian or Ukrainian mafia. A lot of our Armenian henchmen work for those mafias. Look, okay, I guess I'm commenting. I'm commenting. Oh, God, help me. I'm commenting. There is rampant fraud in all those communities. And no one wants it stamped out more than the majority, the law-abiding citizens who came to America to honorably make a new life for themselves and their families. So, you know, huzzah for the immigrants who did not succumb to the mafia bullying tactics and, their own ego-driven rage and greed. Since I have decided to comment, I will just say this about Dr. Oz. He has dual Turkish citizenship and he served in the Turkish military. That should not be permitted. Dual citizenship should not be permitted for those in positions of power. If you serve America, that's what you serve. You serve America and America only. It's not exactly a secret that, the Turks massacred well over 1.5 million Armenians and Greeks in the genocide of 1915. And they and their Azerbaijani Turkic brothers continue to deny it and continue to persecute Armenians through any means available to them. And the fact that he, Oz, who obviously thinks of himself as some sort of self-righteous wizard, talked only about the Armenians and not the other groups involved, that shows clear bias to me. And he should get smacked for that. He should get smacked very hard, the Sıratsız bastard, as hard as the fraudsters themselves. Okay, I commented. I'm moving on now. What else came into quack today? Let's see. Ah, yes. This is from Rihanna, who currently lives in Augusta, Georgia, but is originally from the Ukraine. Ah, hello. Dear Ani, we are told that sitting in silence will change our lives. But how exactly does that work? Let me keep this real simple. Our heads are filled with noise and nonsense. So much noise and nonsense that we don't even realize it. And when you begin a practice of sitting in silence for, say, 20 minutes each day, you become aware of the noise and nonsense. And you take steps to use your God-given mind in more functional ways. That's it, Rihanna. There's no more to it. The silence will open your mind to infinite possibilities and you will have a better life. Do we have another question in the fishbowl? It's not a big fishbowl today, but I do see a neatly folded paper in there. Let's see who it's from. Oh, well, that's a bill for my Visa card. How did that get in there? I hope it's not late. Right. Well, heavens above. I actually think that's it for today. Oh, no, wait. What's this? What's this? There's a little note in here from Omit Personal Details, who says, Ani, Why do you keep ragging on Muslims? You don't rag on any other religion. That is not true. I'm very open about the fact that I think that all religions are basically control mechanisms. They're cults. At best, they were stepping stones at one time or another to grab a group of people from going completely astray and saying, look, you know, we might want some rules and regulations or whatever. But start your study of comparative religion along, and I don't mean theology, divinity, I mean, start your study of comparative religion and take a look at the way mankind has evolved. And I think you'll figure out for yourselves that self-realization, a direct union with God, the representation of God, not the worship of God, is really what all the prophets talked about. Why do I rag on Islam more? Yes, I do, because I do not believe that Islam is a religion. There is an element called a religion, but it's all Islamification. It is actually a cult to dominate the world. It is a rule of law. It is a way to live. It is way beyond anything that we would call a religion. And why anybody would follow the words of somebody who fucked a nine-year-old and sodomized his own soldiers, I really, and you know, covers up the women, has Sharia law, cuts off people's limbs, treats women like shit. This is 2026, people. And you're asking me why I rag on this stuff? It's because it's not worth the price of a rag. That's why. Right. Thank heavens I have now insulted 1 billion people. I am going to be so famous for this. Let's see. Do we have any other questions in here? Anything else? Anything else? No, there isn't. Okay. Well, I guess that's it for Quack. Thanks to the Martini Heads for writing in, because that's the reason we started this show. To know the minds of the great disenfranchised patriots out there and to bring them solace and cocktail recipes. Moving on, my darlings, it is time for a tiny pat of poetry. Yes, folks, after a hard day's shamaning, I have no idea what that means, I like nothing better than coming home, putting my feet up and having a nice cup of tea, who am I kidding, a small drinky poo, and writing some of the best street poetry this world has ever experienced. Yes. And today's offering is named, Our Nation's Gut Biome is a Wreck. Let's bring back some self-respect. Here we go. Here I sit, playing Angry Birds on my phone in the Kaiser Clinic waiting area. My mum's having some sort of scan for her bones. The ambience is the opposite of euphoria. Everyone here is borderline obese. Their expressions range from blank to morose. Methinks modern medicine is no masterpiece. Me also thinks this whole display is gross. The line for the blood draw is so very long. It's a patchwork of pain and of misery. That's because the American diet ain't worth a ding-dong. It's all sugar, chemicals, and Pillsbury. I wrote that today, sitting in the waiting area of the Kaiser Clinic while my mum was having, I think it's a PET scan. Yes, a PET scan. No pets were involved or harmed, but she had a PET scan. If you enjoyed that poetry, because mine is a little different, it would tickle my nether regions if you visited my Substack. And if you go to substack.com, it's called Ani Avedisian's Substack. And, you know, that's where I place my hundreds of little gems that I place upon the altar of mankind's ever-evolving mind. And if that's too much for you to handle, you know, you can just go to my website, aniavedisian.com, and access it from the home page. And now, my darlings, I think we're going to move on to awesome American history. And today, by popular request, actually, we go back in time to the origins of our great country and visit the contribution made by the Culper Ring, a network of spies without whom things may not have gone so well for us. So here's an overview of the Culper Ring. It was a spy network that operated in and around the New York town of Setticut, and I probably, you know, pronounced that wrong, for 5 years during the American Revolutionary War, which, for those of you who don't know, was 1775 to 1783. So it was conceived by General George Washington, our founding father, and operated by a Major Benjamin Talmadge. And this ring, it was made up of civilians who used their little everyday occupations as a means to pass along vital information on British resources and plans to General Washington. You can't have a war without intelligence. And this intelligence provided an important advantage to Washington's really seriously undermanned and under-equipped army. And you have to admit, it played a very great role in the Americans' victory, because the British army was well-trained. It was very well-equipped. And by golly, you know, I look back in time and I go, how did we do it? How did we defeat one of the best armed, best trained, and most committed armies in the world? But we did. And the Culper Ring played a great part in that. So let's do a little background on that, shall we? As the Revolutionary War moved into its third year, Washington realized he needed a new strategy. He had far fewer forces than the British, and the Americans were not well-trained or as well-equipped as the Redcoats were. And Washington knew he needed more information about British plans. He wanted to have spies, but there was a sort of a stigma around spying. You know, I mean, this whole thing about military personnel sneaking up on the enemy or sneaking in the dark of night into enemy encampments to gather information and bring it back across enemy lines. There was a stigma attached to it, but also, let's admit, it was very, very dangerous. So one of Washington's men, Captain Nathan Hale, you know, he had been captured by the British carrying documents, and that to the British indicated that he was a spy. And Captain Nathan Hale, who is now an American patriot hero, was hanged as a result. And when they hang you, well, you die. Moving on, Washington decided to do something a little bit different, perhaps. He thought about a new type of spy network. So instead of using military officers, which were already in short supply, by the way, his network would use civilians who would have a good reason to be in some of the areas where they were spying. It made it a lot harder for the British to detect them and identify them. If you just got a bunch of merchants or whatever walking around doing merchant stuff, you're not going to go, ooh, look, they're selling wares. They must be spies, right? 1778 is when it all happened, and Washington appointed Talmadge to lead the spy ring. Talmadge was a bit of a stickler. He was very, very good at what he did. He recruited only people he could absolutely trust 100% to be part of the ring. And to protect them, the information on the identities of all the spies was a very, 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 very muy, muy, muy guarded secret. And they do tell us that even Washington didn't know who any of them were, or at least he didn't know all of them. The group used code names and numbers to protect their IDs and their missions. For example, Talmadge was known as John Bolton, while Washington was known as Agent 711. The first person Talmadge recruited was his longtime friend, Abraham Woodhull. And Woodhull was a farmer. And he would operate under the name Samuel Culper Sr., giving the group its name. And he recruited one Robert Townsend, a New York merchant who could easily gather, you know, up important information while he was out and about in the city. He became known as Samuel Culper Jr. Caleb Brewster, a whaler operating a fleet of boats, was also part of that ring, and he remained an integral part of the group, even though the Brits did eventually catch up with him and identify him as a spy. So in keeping with the, you know, the feel of the plan, you know, you have ordinary people use their jobs to pass information. So the ring recruited a tavern keeper, Austin Rowe, because his trips to Manhattan to buy supplies could serve as a cover for his spy missions. And we all know what happens in taverns. All of the great revolutions have been won by a bunch of men and some women in taverns working shit out. It's also believed that there was a lone woman in the ring. I'm sure there was more, but this one, Anna Smith Strong, she was inspired to help because her husband, who was a judge, was imprisoned on a British ship for part of the war. And those prison ships, oh my God, you did not want to end up on one of those. People just died on those from starvation and sickness. So it is said that Anna Smith Strong used her clothesline to pass coded messages about information pickups and locations. And she did this by, I guess, hanging her laundry in certain predetermined patterns. Like if she hung her knickers to the left, it would mean one thing. And if she hung her knickers to the right, it would mean something else. So, you know, the American Revolution, a great part of it, owes a great deal to Anna Smith Strong knickers. So this ring, the Culper Ring, operated from 1778 until the end of the war, 5 years later. It was dangerous. It was difficult. It was exciting. And you knew that if the British caught you, you would dingle dangle. So this constant threat of being found out. And these people, after all, they're just civilians. You know, they were always on edge, made a lot of the interactions quite challenging. Washington always needed new intelligence, a greater sense of urgency with each mission, pushing for new intel, probably pushed the mental health of these civilians to their limits. They had to use many different, it wasn't just hanging Anna's knickers up, you know, they had to use many different methods to avoid detection. You know, coded messages, invisible ink on hard-boiled eggs. I mean, whatever they could think of, because they had to pass multiple messages back and forth, back and forth. For instance, when Talmadge had a request for information, he would give it to Rowe, the tavern keeper. And then Rowe would go into British-occupied Manhattan to buy supplies for his business and for his neighbors. And then he would visit Townsend. And then one of the requests for supplies that he would leave would be from brackets John Bolton, which was Talmadge's code name. And then Rowe would leave and Townsend would go to a private place and read Talmadge's communication. He would provide a coded response with answers to Talmadge's questions based on what he had observed as he went about his business in British-occupied Manhattan. The answers would then have to be neatly tucked away in some sort of package for Bolton, which Rowe would then have to go back and pick up. He would then carry it to a secret drop location. I think it was owned by Woodhull, you know, Culper Sr., who would then pick it up, read it, and add any additional information that he had gathered. So it's like, you know, I pass it to you, you pass it to me, I change this and you change that code, and then it goes here and then it goes there and blah, 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 blah. And then when the laundry signals placed by Anna Smith Strong indicated that Brewster's whaleboat was once again in one of the nearby harbors, Woodhull would meet Brewster at night. And Brewster would take the message across the sound to Talmadge, who would then use a series of riders in American-held territory to get the message to Washington. This is a big palaver, and at any step of the way, if somebody did not make it, it would literally just break the ring. In most cases, the members of the ring only knew the people they dealt with directly. They didn't know all the members of the groups. And that is actually common guerrilla cell tactics. You don't really know anybody outside your cell. It makes it safer for everyone. This protected all of them. As a result of this, actually, only Brewster was ever identified truly as a spy. And all of them, by the grace of God, survived the war. Only one Culper Ring communication was ever intercepted by the British. That is marvelous and almost unbelievable. And that letter was taken from Talmadge, and it revealed information that identified a potential new recruit for the ring. who was actually notified in time to destroy any incriminating information. And the British, ha ha, so sad, too bad, were not able to take any action against the members of the group. So the ring and the information that they provided was crucial to Washington's success. And it was just really, I'm blown. My mind is blown by this. The more I read about what they went through and how they did it. I mean, the Culper Ring found information implicating Benedict Arnold in a treasonous plot with Major John André, a British intelligence officer. André, by the way, was captured and hung. And the other threat the ring helped to thwart was a planned British attack on the French forces aiding the Americans in Rhode Island. And Washington got that in time to be able to reposition his forces to prepare to attack the British regulars, causing the British General Henry Clinton to call off the planned attack. Huzzah! Well done, Washington. So I highly recommend that every American who's interested in their history buy some books and study the Culper Ring. Now, it was, I think, on AMC, the television channel, I think it was around 2014, there was a television series called Turn, Washington Spies. And even though it was sort of a lot of fiction in there, it was based on fact. And it's a ripping yarn. And it is all about the impact of the Culper Ring on the American Revolution. And even though it does have fictional elements to it, it's a real eye-opener to, you know, what early America was like, going from that colonial feel to we have to get the redcoats out. I'm going to recommend a couple of books for you. The Culper Ring, The History and the Legacy of the Revolutionary War's Most Famous Spy Ring, is by Charles River. Another book I enjoyed very much is The Culper Spy Ring, A History from the Beginning to the End. And that's actually part of a series of books called Hourly History. It's part of the, that's what it's a part of. Sorry, I'm trying to think here, and thinking doesn't go well when you're drinking cocktails, by the way, people, I just want to tell you. There is also, what was it? If you like your books simple, you don't want to work too hard, and you have youngsters in the house, there are these things called middle grade workbooks. And one of those is a whole series on the American Revolutionary War. And there's a whole series of 13 books in there. And the one about the Culper is called The First Spymaster, George Washington and the Culper Ring, middle grade school books. And you can get those on paperback. And they came out in 2022. So they are up to date, and I'm sure you can get them on Amazon. Well, I hope you enjoyed that little overview of the Culper. I do hope you go and you find that television series Turn, because as I said before, it is absolutely a ripping yarn, and it'll give you some really interesting insight in there. There's one of the actors in there, one of the chaps that plays Sisko, who's a nasty little officer. He portrays it so well. He's such a shit, you just want him to die all the time. But he's the one that's elected to go on up into Canada afterwards and to civilize Canada. And to this day, I think Canada still celebrates Cisco Day. So watch Turn. It's a tremendous romp and you'll enjoy it very much. My darlings, I know this podcast is a little shorter than usual, but there's a very good reason for that. I'm in California caring for my mother, who's not doing very well. So I have to say, I've almost finished my drink, and that always means the end of the show. I hope you enjoyed listening in as much as I enjoyed recording it, because I always have a blast. Meeting up with my martini heads every 3 weeks is honestly the highlight of my life. And I am deeply grateful that you chose to spend this time with me. Today's real life cocktail was, wait for it, a ginger rabbit. And I chose this cocktail specifically because I tend to shy away from what I call shishi concoctions, ones that call for exotic ingredients and strange infusions. But I girded my loins and I went into battle. And I must say, it's quite palatable and a nice change, and I might even make it again. Here's how you make it. You take 1/2 ounce of star anise and black tea infused simple syrup. And yes, don't panic, I will tell you how to make that. You want a slice of fresh ginger. You want one strip of good organic lemon peel, 2 ounces of Basil Hayden's bourbon, 1/2 ounce of creme yvette, and a dash of Angostura bitters. Now, here's how you actually make it. Put the syrup and the ginger into a mixing glass. Twist the lemon peel over the glass to express the oils, and then drop the peel into the glass and muddle it with the syrup and the ginger. Muddle it with your favorite muddle stick. Muddle, 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 hubble, bubble, toil, and trouble. Then you add the bourbon and the creme yvette and the bitters. Bung in a bunch of ice and stir vigorously, vigorously, my darling, until it's really well chilled. And then you strain it into a glass, your favorite cocktail glass, filled with fresh ice. It's really quite lovely. Now, the star anise and black tea infusion. It's very simple. You take one black tea bag to 12 ounces of warm, simple syrup, and you let it infuse for about 12 to 15 minutes. Then you discard the tea bag and you add 6 star anise pods, lightly crushed, not powdered, you'll be sorry. Let that concoction stand for 24 hours, then strain out the solids. And if you keep it in an airtight container, really nice in the fridge, you can have that for up to a month. And I'll tell you might want to make this cocktail every day for a month. Now, I'm going to give you my honest review because I have had many people write in and say, you don't spend enough time on the cocktail. Your show is called Metaphysical Martini. We want more time on the cocktail. So I'm going to spend more time on the cocktail. So here's my honest review on this drink. It's very palatable. It's very nice. I would never turn it down. I love bourbon. I think we've all understood that. I love bourbon and I love Basil Hayden products. But I'm going to have to agree with the chaps at liquor.com for this one. I think it needs a bit more punch in the bourbon area. So for my next batch, I will substitute the Basil Hayden for a high rye, such as Old Grandad. Now, don't laugh. When I say Old Grandad, in my opinion, it's underrated and undervalued. At around $25 a bottle, it is a very useful addition to your home bar. And people are always saying to me, Arnie, which bourbons do you drink straight? Which bourbons would you drink as a mixer? Here's my thing. If there's a bourbon that you can't drink straight, then put it in a bucket. And if you have foot fungus, use it to kill your foot fungus. If you can't drink a bourbon straight, you're not going to drown out the disgusting flavor by putting it in a mix. So taste all the liquor that you buy straight before putting it in a mix. And if they have those little, when you used to fly, when you fly, they give you those little tiny airplane size bottles. If you're going to, don't invest a whole bunch of money. Like the Basil Hayden stuff is, I've paid up between $50 and $65 for a bottle of that. Don't invest an entire bottle. Invest in a baby mini bottle and see how you like it. And this will also help you to refine your palate. A big thank you to mysticalwares.com for kindly arranging the intergalactic distribution of this show. It's a little known fact, but Metaphysical Martini is big in some parts of our solar system. I'm very big on Venus, and I'm very big on Saturn, and I'm right up there in Uranus. Mysticalwares.com is your one-stop online shop for all things metaphysical, quizzical, and mythical. Mysticalwares.com is your metaphysical bomb. And lovely people they are too, and they're absolutely wonderful at packing your stuff. So go to mysticalwares.com and order everything, and you'll make the owners so happy. I am Ani, mad as the day is long, Avedisian. This was Metaphysical Martini, a production of Cosmic Reality Radio, to whom we are most grateful. Mwah, mwah, mwah. And don't forget to go on to Rumble and watch some of the other offerings from Cosmic Reality Radio, by the way. There's a lot of good stuff on there. But for now, until we meet again, if anyone in your family is a domestic terrorist, kick them out until they regain their sanity. If you attack a federal officer and get shot, how stupid are you? And stop watching the news, because it's not news, it's propaganda. And if you want to negotiate these turbulent times with honor and integrity, then, my darlings, I highly recommend you let the spirit inhabit the human.
Have been listening to The Metaphysical Martini with Ani Avedisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.